Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly opportunity to field your questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. As usual, I'm with Layla Mutin, who's our resident nutritionist. And both of us are here to put our heads together and answer your questions or share your comments with our Intelligent Medicine listenership. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine again. Layla, thanks for joining us once more.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Oh, my goodness. Hi.
How are things? It's September.
Yeah,
and
it's almost October.
This is a week that I dread because I live in Manhattan near the UN. Okay. I was actually thinking of going out to Long Island because I have a home on Long Island, which is, you know, nice in the fall. And I had to think twice about it because getting in and out of the city is virtually impossible. So it is so bad.
UN General Assembly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. UN General Assembly is here, and the streets are locked down, and there are barricades up. And I'm taking a quick trip to California for my 55th high school reunion this weekend. And I needed a bike part because an old friend of mine invited me to go bicycling, but he doesn't have the right kind of pedals. So I needed quickly to get a set of pedals to put on his bike. He said, you know, I can loan you the bike, but I don't have the right kind of pedals. And so it's a simple, relatively inexpensive part. And so I was going to walk, you know, a couple of blocks to the bike store near here. And I couldn't get there. I couldn't get there because it was a complete lockdown. And there's even another bike store that's also a little further walk, you know, maybe instead of, you know, a couple of blocks, it's like five blocks away. I couldn't get to that one either. So, I'm having to have the essential part, sent, via overnight shipping, you know, at greater expense so that I can get it in time for my trip. I mean, it's crazy. And during this podcast, I've got a pretty good directional mic here, which only picks up my voice and doesn't pick up ambient sounds. But, and I've got also what purport to be soundproof windows. I'm on the 21st floor of a building here, between 2nd and 3rd Avenues, on 47th Street. The UN is about, 45th Street on, 1st Avenue. So, the whole area is locked down and there are demonstrations going on outside, and I can hear like the dull roar of the crowd behind me, which may bleed into the podcast. So if you hear these, you know, kind of weird, little bit extraneous sounds, you may not hear them, but
I don't hear anything.
Depending on what they're chanting and, you know, what group is, you know, yelling at one another, and, you know, especially if there's like disruptions and the sirens are going to begin. It's something I don't look forward to every fall here in New York.
Can't wait till we get back out of town again. All right.
But something that we both enjoyed this week was a Senate hearing. It was a round table.
Yes.
Under the auspices of Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, who is a guy who listens. I mean, he listens.
Yes.
He's open-minded.
Yes.
And so this conference, I believe, was organized by Callie Means, who, with his sister Casey Means, just wrote a book called Good Energy, which is a great book. And I, you know, I have to say that they are extraordinarily media savvy and eloquent about the health crisis in America. And so both of them spoke at this hearing. I mean, it was like a three-hour hearing, and I think you heard the YouTube of it.
Yes.
I heard it in real time, except I had to bail because I had to do a podcast towards the end.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I mean, it was such a vindication of what we have been doing in our professional careers. And I think especially resonant for you, because you began your career with Dr. Atkins, and what a lot of the emphasis was on our, you know, the crappy food supply, but a lot of the emphasis was on the potential of low-carb diets to heal our epidemics of metabolic disease. I just thought it was remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. And to hear it coming from there,
right,
Washington, D.C., and all these wonderful people that were speaking, all these very passionate people. I didn't catch every speaker.
Yeah.
I think I caught about 70% of the speakers. I need to go back and listen to the rest. But really, I was just blown away. My jaw dropped to the ground. I was so happy. I was just so happy to see this happening. And it's like, wow, here in my lifetime, here we are.
Yep.
Whereas just a mere 20 years ago, Dr. Hoffman, it's like I was being spat on in my undergrad class. What you're doing? What? Oh, that's terrible. How can you? All that bad is so bad. And oh my goodness.
Right.
And now how it's all changed.
History could have actually rebuked you in terms of taking a wrong turn nutritionally. Some pithy quotes that I got from Marty McCary. Marty McCary is a surgeon. He's a gastrointestinal surgeon. But he's a guy who is a critic of the medical establishment. So he actually is a very, very prestigious and well-credentialed physician. But he now heads an initiative at Johns Hopkins University that looks at practices of medicine with a critical view towards their utility and cost effectiveness. And so he has written a book, a new book, which looks at some of the practices that we've undertaken in medicine and how they've been wrong turns, you know, like our now very high degree of C-sections. Also, the way we handled peanut allergy by telling kids, by telling parents to withhold peanuts from kids early in life. And the net result is the incidence of peanut allergy soared. And all these dogmas, including, and he does include, the low-fat diet as kind of a craze that, basically benefited the food industry and benefited, makers of medication to lower cholesterol. One of the statistics, and I think it was RFK Jr., who also spoke very eloquently there. And I've been, think what you might about his joining forces with Trump. Think what you might like, what you might about his opposition to vaccines. And by the way, he's not opposing all vaccines indiscriminately.
No.
He just says, you know, that we ought to be thinking about our rush to come up with more and more vaccines and the safety and desirability of that. But he pointed out that Americans live 8 fewer years than people in Japan or Switzerland.
Wow.
So, and we spend far more. So Marty McCary said, this is a great statement. He says, quote, "The best way to lower drug costs in the United States is to stop taking drugs we don't need."
Bravo.
And then
bravo.
With regard to, you know, this whole thing about medical misinformation and disinformation and, you know, these bills that want to prosecute doctors and the social media censoring of misinformation and disinformation. He said, "The greatest perpetrator of misinformation has been the United States government with the food pyramid."
Yes.
Bravo.
Amen. So that it's true. It's absolutely true.
And then, you know, when it comes to settled science, you know, and challenging orthodoxy, you know, like follow the science, mm-hmm. follow the science. They've been yelling at us. McCary says, the purpose of science is to challenge deeply held assumptions. That's really fundamental to the yes. scientific inquiry.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think we're on the right side of this argument, and many intelligent medicine mm-hmm. listeners, I think, will take heart if they use the opportunity to see a recording on, you know, YouTube or, you know, other sources for the hearing that was held on Wednesday, September 23rd, a Senate yeah. Round table on mm-hmm. health. And
I think you could find direct links to each of the speakers on Senator Ron Johnson's Twitter.
Exactly.
Or X.
Exactly.
X, yeah.
That he's excerpted them. So, you know, if you don't want to listen mm-hmm. to the whole thing, you can get like bite-sized morsels of some of the more pithy comments by speakers.
Yeah.
I was especially impressed by the testimony of a young lady who is not a health professional. She's actually the daughter of psychologist Jordan Peterson. And
Michaela Peterson.
Michaela yeah. Peterson, mm-hmm. who detailed her personal story of having juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, which is a very relentless disease. It's tragic because yeah. you know, usually older people get arthritis. When children get arthritis, it's especially tragic. It's a very serious inflammatory disease. She was highly medicated with immunosuppressive drugs. They didn't help. She had to have surgery for like an ankle replacement and ultimately became very sick and debilitated from the medication and from the condition mm-hmm. and then embarked on a diet program. First eliminating junk and then going more radical towards essentially a carnivore diet where she virtually yeah. eliminated plant foods. And now she subsists on animal protein and animal fat as mm-hmm. her source of calories because you need protein and you need calories. You can get the calories from carbs, you can, from fat, either way, you get them. And mm-hmm. She brought herself into, you know, near total remission with that and has now been able to yeah. have children.
Yes.
You know, just was life altering for her. So
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing stuff.
So for anybody who hasn't seen that, that's a particularly, eye-opening, account of diet therapy really at its finest. And I love what also Dr. Jordan Peterson said, especially, you know, we need fats, we need proteins. There's no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. This harkens back to what Dr. Atkins used to say.
Yep.
And oh my goodness, the vitriol
yeah.
that he had to put, yes. or yes. all of us in that camp.
Yeah.
You know, even as an undergrad, I remember being dissed by my classmates.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one professor pulled me over and told me privately, I'm glad you're working with Dr. Atkins. She was afraid to say that in public to me. Anyway.
Yeah. It was a stealth thing. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
my goodness. Yes.
So anyway, so, you know, wonderful vindication.
It's very heartening. It's very encouraging at this point in our lives, in our careers, to see this happening, being talked about openly.
Yeah. And regardless of the outcome yeah. of the presidential election, you know, we tend to place a lot of emphasis on, you know, who's president. And it is important. This is not a movement that is going to be quashed. This is a movement that has sustained momentum. And very mm-hmm. gifted people are stepping up mm-hmm. to articulate this very, very different approach to healthcare and push back yeah. on, you know, a pharmaceutical model of healthcare and mm-hmm. a, you know, big food model of food delivery. And big agriculture, you know, with, you know, factory farms and GMO mm-hmm. crops. So anyway. Mm-hmm. Enough said. Check it out for yourselves.
Yeah.
Let's get into questions. Oh, by the way, good point, which to, mm-hmm. you know, before we get into the meat of this, which is questions, let's take a moment to acknowledge one of our sponsors. So listen up.
Yes.
Here goes. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free FullScript account. Buying through FullScript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. FullScript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free FullScript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our questions. What's our first question for today, Layla?
Okay, we've got a question here from Dean. Dear sir, I saw your website. I wanted to ask what you think is the best supplement or vitamin or anything else for chronic tinnitus. I know there's no cure, but I've suffered immensely for over 40 years. I had a motorcycle accident and I had lots of damage done to my face. Broken facial bones, temporal bones, broken jaw, total hearing loss. I developed severe tinnitus 6 months later, and that was 43 years ago.
Huh.
Why isn't there a cure after all of these years? It's made my life a living hell.
Yeah.
Every day it's a hissing, roaring, and buzzing in my head. It's hard to relax. Is there anything I can do?
Yeah, I think the analogy is to kind of a broken radio, you know? And, you know, not that it's completely not delivering sound impulses, but the sound impulses are of a character that is, not responsive to sound waves, but, you know, auto-generated within either the inner ear or the brain.
And, oh, I have to mention Dr. Hoffman.
Sure.
He says, I have a Nucleus 22-channel cochlear implant since 1989.
Okay, so, I mean... This is a complicated situation. This is not ordinary run-of-the-mill tinnitus, you know, which people get sometimes as they get older. And that is a little bit more akin to, you know, the kind of thing when you're driving around in like, I don't know, central Utah or Wyoming or something, and there's no close radio station. And, you know, you get a lot of hiss when you try to listen to a station because the signal is weak. And that's because either the brain or the... tiny bones that interpret sound waves are, not doing a job as well, or the nerve cells have declined in their mitochondrial efficiency, you know, just age-related stuff. Mm-hmm. This is traumatic. So something basically was damaged or destroyed in the inner ear or the brain, you know, because there was probably a brain injury component to this too. This is a tough one, and I'm not sure that, you know, first of all, even in cases of run-of-the-mill tinnitus, the results from supplementation are, you know, I would say, you know, low double-digit percentage. So people respond to ginkgo biloba. They sometimes respond to higher dose vitamin B3, either niacin or, you know, nicotinamide riboside. Pycnogenol is a circulatory enhancer. But I got to say, this is a beyond the, you know, you got to kind of know when to hold in, you know, we saw patients and they would come with stuff, you know, like someone would come in, you know, and I remember once a really famous celebrity came in to see me with a friend of his who was blind. And, you know, they said, well, you know, Dr. Hoffman, you've got a great reputation. What vitamins should this person take or herbs to reverse their blindness? And I felt, you know, kind of embarrassed because this person was really excited about turning his friend on to my good offices. And I had to say, well, from what I understand about this person's blindness, taint nothing on God's earth that's going to reverse the blindness. You know, maybe there's some treatment for macular degeneration. You know, you can slow the progression of glaucoma and cataracts. But when you're blind, it's irreversible. And, you know, when you have deafness where, you know, a cochlear implant is actually... It's kind of like the neural link for the ears. You know, the neural link is the thing that Musk is proposing to help people recover from blindness. And we're actually getting to the point where we're mapping the ocular nerve tracts, and we can create you know, kind of a camera to capture images and send nerve impulses to the brain to recreate vision. Well, vision's much more complicated than hearing. You know, hearing is much simpler. And so that's what a cochlear implant does. But, you know, it bypasses the inner ear and goes directly to the brain to send nerve impulses that translate sound. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of destruction here, and I'm just not sure what else to do.
Dean says he needs to take clonazepam for anxiety.
Sure. Yeah.
Because of the crazy tinnitus.
Sure.
The doctor wants to put him on an antidepressant.
Yeah, yeah.
But that can make the tinnitus worse.
You know, that's actually, you know, those are worth trying because really it's, it is what it is. It's kind of like
And you have
pain.
To find a way to deal with it or.
Yeah, yeah. And
or it, make it matter less to you somehow.
Yeah. Try to reduce the degree of distress that it engenders.
Yeah, that it causes, right? Oh, mm-hmm. Goodness. Dean, we wish you all right. All the best. Thank you for writing.
Yeah.
And okay.
Thanks for listening. My goodness gracious. You know, it's listening to a broadcast has got to be a real reach for you. And we appreciate very much your listenership under these challenging circumstances. So there you go. Okay. What's next, Layla? What's our next question?
Okay. We've got a question here from Marianne. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. What is your criteria for prescribing a daily low-dose aspirin? I had a zero calcium score, but is that a reason to discontinue it? Isn't for stroke prevention different than cardiac health?
Yep. Okay. So aspirin used to be recommended for everyone over the age of 50, because it was assumed that everyone over the age of 50, I mean, typically that's when people get heart attacks and strokes. So, you know, it's perfectly innocuous, you know, take a, what's called low dose aspirin, which used to be called baby aspirin, but baby aspirin is an oxymoron because babies should never be given aspirin. It was only discovered after babies developed very serious problem called Reye syndrome. I think that's pronunciation.
R-E-Y-E-S.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Y-E-S. Or Reye syndrome. Where, you know, pediatricians know about this, but it doesn't happen anymore because they don't give kids aspirin anymore for a fever. They give them Tylenol. You know, that's typically, you know, Tylenol can be tolerated by kids, you know, in children's doses. That's a way to make a kid more comfortable when they have a high fever. But they had a problem, which is that, you know, aspirin is used for pain. You know, you have a headache, you take an Anacin, right? That's the old fashioned way of headache.
Anacin,
remedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they had all this leftover 81 milligram low dose aspirin. So, they had a problem and they had to figure out a way to unload all that low-dose aspirin. And they figured out a new application of it, which is to place adults on low-dose aspirin. You know, Anacin is like, I think, 325. You need higher-dose aspirin for a headache. You know, like you take 81 milligrams of aspirin for a headache, and it's not going to touch it. So the low-dose aspirin, which used to be the pediatric dose, became the standard dose for what's called prophylaxis or prevention. Mm-hmm. So they then recommended it for older adults. Now, the problem is that when you take a bunch of folks who have very low risk of heart attack or stroke and you put them on aspirin, the harm is greater than the benefit. And what they found, and that low dose aspirin can cause ulcers if you take it day in and day out. So if you take aspirin, the recommendation is that you take it, you know,
at night,
short term, you know, I mean, I don't even know if taking it with food makes a difference, you know, and then there was enteric coated aspirin, which actually didn't really pan out in terms of protection of the gastrointestinal tract. So there are people getting bleeding ulcers, people getting
or rectal bleeds,
You know, we've seen a fair number of patients with anemia, who turns out had hemorrhoids that, you know, where there was slow, gradual blood loss due to the fact they were taking aspirin, and they had to stop the aspirin. Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
interestingly enough, a side effect of taking aspirin is tinnitus.
Yes, it is.
And
by the way, an aspirin, low-dose aspirin may have benefits in terms of prevention of recurrence of colon cancer or in patients who have a lot of polyps. There are benefits. So maybe, you know, it's always a risk-benefit equation. Is the benefit greater than the risk? So lately, cardiologists have been taken back this recommendation. They said the general population should not be taking it, but under certain circumstances, yes, maybe. So, you know, if you've had a TIA, you know, these days, if you've had a heart attack, they want you on stronger stuff. They want you on Plavix. They want you on, you know, like, you know, prescription medication, not just over-the-counter aspirin. There are some instances where people have very infrequent atrial fibrillation, and this is controversial. They're given aspirin instead of, some of the newer drugs, like, you know, what are some of the newer drugs?
Eliquist.
Eliquist, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one. What is the other one?
Yeah, there's another.
Pradaxa,
exactly. Very good. Yeah. Once again, we demonstrate that together we have a brain. You know, we're sort of, we actually, each of us are 50%, cognizant, but together we it's a collaborative brain. So anyway, I think aspirin is kind of passe for prevention because on the one hand, it's, you know, in people very low risk, like you have zero plaque and you don't have hypertension, you're at high risk for stroke, don't take it. If you have high risk, they want you to take something stronger than aspirin usually. Aspirin is a little bit in decline as a means of preventing heart attacks and strokes. And now, especially, you know, if you have zero, if you have zero plaque, that's an indication that you probably have very little in terms of risk of stroke because, you know, you can also check your carotid arteries. It would be kind of weird if you had zero in your coronary arteries, but you had a lot in your carotids.
Yeah. Now, Marianne says, my husband has a calcium score and risk factor. So is it recommended for him to take a
I would check with his doctor, actually, under that circumstance, because on the one hand, aspirin may be overkill. On the other hand, aspirin may be underkill. And, you know, if he asks that a question, the doctor may say, well, you need more protection than aspirin. I would say this is that, other things have preventive capabilities, like natokinase is one of the things I like. So without higher risk of bleeding, generally. Fish oil also has some prevention of stickiness without dramatically increasing the risk of bleeding, usually. In fact, to the contrary. So,
would you consider natokinase instead of aspirin?
That's tricky. You know, actually, that question came up with Dr. Atkins because Dr. Atkins, as you may know, he had an arrhythmia. And I don't know exactly what type, but when you have an arrhythmia, you should be on a blood thinner. And so Dr. Atkins, you know, I used to listen to his radio show when I was, you know, beginning in medicine because he was on the same radio station I was on.
Yeah.
And sometimes he would tell people, well, you know, don't take the blood thinner, take, all these things that are, you know, fish oil and ginkgo and bignot, you know, all the various things that were blood thinners. But to my mind, if you have, say, atrial fibrillation, you really need to be on a pharmaceutical blood thinner because they're more reliable as blood thinners than the natural things. And, I'm convinced that Dr. Atkins died not of a heart attack or a stroke, as was alleged, because the people exulted, you know, that, look, this diet guru, he dropped dead of a heart attack. I don't think he had a heart attack. I think he had a drop attack due to an arrhythmia, and I suspect he was on a blood thinner. He finally relented and went on a pharmaceutical blood thinner, and what would have been just a mild head injury or concussion became a brain bleed, which killed him, you know,
had to clot. And they
I think
to
I think he had a subdural hematoma, you know, which you know, which killed him because he slipped on ice. I mean, it may not have even been a drop. It may have been just really a, you know, the way he used to brush around, you know, like a bull in a china shop. You know, he might have been careless, slipped on the ice, fell down because he was on a blood thinner.
It was after it was a snowstorm in April.
Yep.
And
yep.
the story was is that he didn't wear his galoshes or something. He wore shoes, and that's it. I know for me that's a recipe for disaster, but I would imagine for most people it would.
If anybody were to, you know, had the character to ignore their mother's orders to put on your galoshes, that would be Bob Atkins. He's that kind of guy. Like, galoshes, I don't need galoshes. You know. Anyway.
Another question about the aspirin thing.
Yeah.
So you know how some people will get on a plane and they might take a low-dose aspirin to prevent anything?
Yes, yes.
Would you instead use natokinase?
Natokinase is great for, and pycnogenol. Actually, there's been some studies on pycnogenol, and I'm not sure that natokinase has been studied for what's called economy class syndrome, which is the potential for blood clots to form in the legs, which then have the, since blood goes towards the heart, they go to the heart, and then they get shot out into the brain, and that can cause a stroke. Or they get shot out into the lungs. More commonly, they get shot out of the lungs and causes a pulmonary embolus, which can be fatal.
Interesting. Okay. Marianne, thank you very much for that very thoughtful question.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sure that there, you know, if you look at, I mean, the American Heart Association, there are criteria or there are guidelines for physicians to follow. But I'm not always confident that the guidelines are the most appropriate guidelines.
The other advice that drives me crazy is doctors tell their patients to take the aspirin at night, which means on an empty stomach, which is exactly what you don't want to do.
Oh, right.
I know you said that you're not even sure that food, but at least better taken on a full stomach than an empty one anyway.
And that's the idea behind buffering, you know, which is buffered. But the best buffering occurs not with buffering, but with buffering the aspirin with food, but even that is not entirely a fail-safe, you know.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right. Thank you, Marianne.
Okay.
Oh, we've got a question here from... Let's do
that in part two, because we time flies when you're having fun.
Two.
And here we are at the limits of our time for part one. So give us a preview of that question for part two.
What's happened to Future Farm products?
Okay. We'll address that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And you can get questions to us via questions@drhoffman.net, or alternatively, call 877-726-8255 and record a question. That's a question for our weekly broadcast, our radio program. And those are the questions we play on the air. But if you prefer to write your question, just write it out. Send it to questions@drhoffman.net. Comments are welcome as well. Okay. We'll be back with part two.
Right.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, and it's our weekly Q&A with Layla.